It's the Pop-Matic Podcast for August 16th. August 6th.
What day is it?
August 6th, 2014.
Where am I?
You guys know I had to splice in the right date a couple episodes ago because I said it's the Pop-Matic Podcast for the wrong date. So I had to go back later and do an overdub.
Oopsie.
So it's the podcast for August 6th, and I was going to try a Scottish accent, but I think it's better off if I don't. So anybody?
I cannot do it.
Ugh.
Not groundskeeper Willie?
Just the noozle and the hues.
Sean Connery?
Sean Connery, yeah.
Yash. Yash, Miss Moneypenny.
That was great.
Mike's going after it. I like it.
Why Scotland?
Why not Scotland?
Because the dots are even better. I like that. I was thinking before that because the TV version of Diana Gabaldon's uber-popular novel Outlander will debut on Starz on August 9th. They're going to turn it into a miniseries. It's a big, fat book. So if you're not familiar, Outlander is about a World War II nurse, Claire Randall. She gets teleported back in time to 18th century Scotland. She's forced to marry a burly dude in a kilt. She has to choose between him and her 20th century husband, who's a history professor and former spy. Oh, man, the plot just exploded.
That's why it's long.
Think of all the possibilities you can have with that, right?
There's a lot to talk about.
So what's great about Outlander, it's sort of impossible to classify. Is it romance? Is it historical fiction? Is it SF? Here's what executive producer Ronald Moore had to say about it.
This is a period piece with a time travel in it. It's a fantastical world. People have loved these books in many, many countries, and there's 20-some million books in print. We love these books, too. We're not here to destroy this work. We're here to honor it. Claire is our central character, and the story is told through her eyes. Scotland's rich history provides a dynamic backdrop to the story of Outlander. This country has a particular quality to it. The light has a particular quality. The grass, the trees, the landscape itself is a character in the show. We're going to try to convince you that this really happened to this woman, that here's a character that you should care about and follow her as she goes on this extraordinary adventure.
So this has nothing to do with the Toyota Outlander, right?
Close.
See, if that's all, one of those driving around in like tartan or something. The jaunty hat. I totally watch that show.
I would just add for posterity that the reason that it's unclassifiable is because Gabaldon said when she was writing it, she never thought it would see the light of day. Like, this was her first novel. And she's a research person. That's what she does. And that's why it's so dense. And so she was just throwing it in for the, let's try this. Oh, and somehow it worked all together. So.
No rules, man. Forget about the rules.
Worked.
And we've talked about this before on the show that it's probably one of the more, probably artistically accomplished fan fiction to pro books that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on with it. I think the only reason that it gets pigeonholed as like romance so much is that was the way it was marketed when it came out. If you look at the original cover, it looks like romance novels around that time.
When did it come out again? We just celebrated a big anniversary. Like, was it 20 years?
Librarians and facts don't go together.
I don't do math.
Pishty push.
1991.
The year Terminator 2 came out.
So, and also the eighth book in the series, in the Outlander series, written in my own heart's blood, was just released.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still really, really popular. I would feel remiss if I didn't mention that September 18th of this year is the historic Scottish independence referendum. On that day, the people of Scotland will vote whether or not to devolve from the UK. As we've mentioned before on the show, that is a big freaking deal, at least if you're interested.
One more thing about Outlander. For many of us, we don't have cable, so we'll have to wait for the library to order the first season on DVD. But Starz is going to post episode 1 online for free for anyone to watch. So we can link up to that in the show notes. It will definitely be online on August 6th when this podcast goes live.
That is really, really cool. But I just, like, for me, the idea that I would watch it on cable is, like, so foreign to me that it's, like, not even compute. Like, oh, yeah, that's something that should happen. No, it's, like, not even a reality. But it's cool that they'll stream the first one.
Bye.
Okay, Scotland. I would also feel remiss if I did not mention that Waverley by Sir Walter Scott is often considered to be the first historical novel. But Crystal, you're going to tell us about a more contemporary Scottish novel.
Indeed. So I actually was going to talk about the one-of-a-kind writer, comic, and talk show host Craig Ferguson. Then I remember he's actually an American citizen now.
Oh, boo.
So I'll just say, if you've never read or listened to his memoir, American on Purpose, request it now. Okay, I am going to tell you about writer Denise Mina. If you enjoy how Dennis Lehane drives you to the middle of Boston and leaves you to read your way out, Denise Mina's novels do the same thing for her beloved city of Glasgow. Mina was born in Glasgow in 1966 and moved all over Europe with her family before returning to Scotland for college. She studied law and was researching a PhD thesis on mental illness in female offenders before writing her first novel, Garnet Hill, while existing on that student grant money.
Everyone who writes these books are freaking smart.
I know. So her books are fast-paced thrillers that not only bring the city of Glasgow off the page, they're filled with complex and complicated characters. Mina shared in an interview, "A drunk woman is no one's icon. A violent woman is no one's icon. I always wanted to take characters who were disregarded and look at their perspective." Mina's Garnet Hill trilogy features heroine Maureen O'Donnell, who's a psychiatric patient and survivor of sexual abuse, whose married lover is found with his throat slit in her living room. The first book in the series won the Crime Writers Association Award for Best First Novel. Now, after she ended that trilogy, Mina began to write about a character who's a journalist, Patricia Paddy Meehan. She's a Glasgow journalist on the crime beat. So you start with The Field of Blood for that series of books. Since then, Mina has been writing the Detective Inspector Alex Moreau novels, with the latest, The Red Rose, being published earlier this year. But you want to start with Still Midnight. Now, Mina has also written plays and comics, including Hellblazer. Although I have to disappoint, none of the available graphic novels at NPL include her storylines. But she also adapted Stieg Larsson's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo into graphic novel form, which we do have. Now, Mina strikes me as the kind of writer who doesn't particularly like labels, but she is considered a writer of tartan noir, which is Scottish crime fiction inspired by the hard-boiled books that some of us know and love. Other tartan noir writers to be aware of that are all available at NPL, Christopher Brookmeyer, Stuart McBride, Val McDermid, and Ian Rankin. And so I have to put in a plug for the Killer Thrillers book club, as we will be reading and discussing Ian Rankin's first novel, Knots and Crosses, for our October meeting. So I hope you can join us. And Brian, what things Scottish are you going to tell us about today?
Well, the first edition of Knots and Crosses had an amazing cover, and yeah, we had it here at the library for a long time, but eventually it just aged out, but it was so cool.
It's not like, what is it? Because the modern one is like a knot. It's like not very sexy.
Yeah, not into it. But the old one was really cool. It was like a skull with a chain. It was cool.
Cool. Anyway,
maybe I'll throw in a picture of it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I wanted to talk about the actor Alan Cumming.
Yes. I love Alan Cumming.
I love Alan Cumming, too. I think it'd be hard to find something more Scottish than Shakespeare's Macbeth, performed entirely by Alan Cumming, who's a dual citizen with USA and Scotland, produced by the National Theatre of Scotland. Macbeth is often referred to as the Scottish play because it's about a Scottish king. And when I say performed entirely by Mr. Cumming, I mean he voices all the roles, women and the men and the choruses and everything. We have an audio version. It was a stage play, but this audio version was recorded specifically to be released on CD. So here's a little sample of him as Lady Macbeth.
Knots had, all spent, when our desire is got without content. 'Tis safer to be that which we destroy than by destruction dwell in doubtful joy.
And that's exactly how I feel about doing the podcast once a week now that we've been doing it for a while. I'm glad that he didn't go like overly feminine when on the female roles. You know, there's extra stuff on the CD, and the music was actually done by Max Richter, who Crystal has talked about in the past. So Alan Cumming is one of my favorite actors, and he tickles my fancy. I want to go on a date with him. And when he first came on my radar, it was back in the 90s when he was in the cabaret revival, and he was the role of MC. And he had got this role in the London 1993 cabaret revival. You know, they had rearranged the music. He reinvented the character somewhat. And then it came to New York in 98. It was a huge hit. He won a Tony Award for his performance as the MC. And I think that's the version of cabaret that is still tours now, is that version. And then, of course, after that, the first time I actually saw him in a movie, he had this little role in Eyes Wide Shut, Stanley Kubrick's last movie, where he played the hotel clerk. But I think it was a really important role because he's this hotel clerk and he flirts with Tom Cruise because he assumes that Tom Cruise is gay. And it's really important to the movie because Eyes Wide Shut is all about the bottom falling out of Tom Cruise's character's sexuality. Like, he thinks he's the man, he thinks he's in charge, and then, like, everything that he thinks he knows kind of gets lost. And that's only reinforced when, you know, he's totally discombobulated when this hotel clerk thinks that he's gay. And then after that, the most big budget thing that he was in, I think he was perfectly cast as Nightcrawler in X-Men 2. And any bad thoughts that you'd have about that? I don't have an opinion about X-Men 2 other than he was perfectly cast as Nightcrawler. So since then, you know, he's become this really famous character actor and even more famous on the stage. He eventually had his own one-man show called I Bought a Blue Car Today, which is a terrible title, Alan, please. Okay. But we have that on Hoopla and you can listen. And the last movie I saw him in was The Tempest, but I'll talk about that next week more, so I don't want to get into that too much.
Teaser.
The first time I saw him, he was the one guy in GoldenEye. He was the
Japan
guy in GoldenEye. I'm invincible.
Yeah,
and so now I'm really, and I saw him on Rosie O'Donnell. He was performing his cabaret, the Vieux Comme un Bienvenu. But now I like him on The Good Wife, and it's such a completely different side of him. Like, he's usually the freaky weird guy, but this is now he's the straight laced Jewish lawyer. And I mean, it's fun to see another side of him.
Isn't he reprising his role in Cabaret, like, this year?
Yeah, he's doing it.
Yeah, like 20 years later.
In New York?
Yeah, because the reason I know this, that's the one where Shia LaBeouf got kicked out, and he tweeted, Shia LaBeouf has left the theater.
And also something to look out for. I'm not sure if we have it on order yet, but we definitely will. He's written a memoir, Not My Father's Son, I believe is the title.
That's on order.
So I am really excited to read that.
And listeners, I love all of you. I'm not linking to all this crap. I'm just going to put his name in as author link. You can sort through it.
Man.
All right. Okay. Yeah. he's had a good career since Cabaret, and more power to him. And he's also the spokesman for Yes Scotland, which is how he will be voting during the referendum to devolve from the UK. And that is what I had. So, Mike.
Today I was going to talk about George MacDonald Fraser, which is the most Scottish name you could possibly imagine, and his Flashman series of historical novels. So he's from Glasgow. He's also worked as a screenwriter, but he also, you know, wrote a lot of other novels. Screenplays that he wrote or co-wrote on include the Three Musketeers and the Four Musketeers, films from the 70s with Michael York and Oliver Reed and Charlton Heston as Cardinal Richelieu, which is just awesome casting. Force 10 from Navarone, Octopussy, and Red Sonja. So good stuff from the 70s. Flashman was a character from a Victorian children's novel called Tom Brown's School Days. He was like a bully, and he gets expelled at the end of the book. And then here he kind of imagines that Flashman grew up and became a military hero. But it turns out that it was all a sham, that he was a huge coward, and he kept trying to run away and, like, you know, would get caught up in all these military events that he had nothing to do with and didn't want to have anything to do with. The conceit is that Fraser discovered trunks of Flashman's memoirs, and he adds, like, tons of footnotes. It's really neat as a history buff to, like, read about, you know, how Madagascar was in the 19th century, or, you know, certain Indian rebellions, or my favorite book in the series is Flashman and the Angel of the Lord, where Flashman participates in John Brown's raid at Harper's Ferry, where it basically hangs out in a room the whole time and watches it. I think it's really funny, but some people make it really offended because it's extremely politically incorrect. He is a huge bigot and a sexist, but the people that he's making that he doesn't like are usually way better than him and smarter than him and all that kind of stuff. So you shouldn't get, you know, offended or anything. It was made into a movie in the 70s. One of them it's called Royal Flash, which we have, starring Malcolm McDowell. It's kind of like The Prisoner of Zenda, where like he Flashman poses as like a prince somewhere in Germany, I think. It's pretty good. If you like the books, I'd check it out because it's kind of weird seeing like, oh, it was, you know. I mean, it's based on the second book, so you get like a kind of first book like recap at the very beginning. It's pretty cool. The downside to me is that like a part of the fun for me is that it's the inner monologue. You know, he'll meet somebody and be like, oh, you know, how are you, old chap? You know, and then in his head, he's all like, you know, what a loser. I'm not going to like, you know. But it's still worth watching. So how about you, Amanda?
Well, I think I picked up Outlander a while ago because of the romance side, so apparently that was good marketing on their part because it got me to read a really long book.
It won the big romance award the year it came out.
Yeah. So, but that book is long, and I have tried to read the second one. I've started about three times, and fellow Outlander geek Susan Poulter downstairs, she told me that the second one's kind of bad, so if we just kind of skim over it and get to the next one. But I was trying to think of other Scottish books I've read, and I thought about a series I read about a year ago by Maya Banks called The Montgomerys and the Armstrongs, and so I was like, well, I could talk about that. And I got to look in, but she hasn't finished the trilogy yet. Like, we were supposed to have the last book out this last spring, and it hasn't come out, and now they've pushed back the date until next year, so who knows. But she has another trilogy called the McCabe Trilogy. Also set in Scotland. How could you not sit in Scotland with a name like McCabe? These are romances, but I like them because there's still more of a story. It's not just jumping in bed together every 5 seconds. There actually is plot to it, and we care about the characters. The first one in her series is called In Bed with the Highlander, and there are three McCabe brothers, and each book features a brother. Wasn't that convenient? This is set, they didn't give an exact year, but it's set back in the time of Scotland when the lairds would control the heirs, and so they're trying to form this big union so they can protect the king because the king is being challenged and he might be seated, and they're going to divide Scotland and, you know, mass hysteria. Each book is trying to align the McCabe family with the MacDonald family, who conveniently has a daughter. And so it's just a matter of which McCabe brother she's going to marry. So we have all three of these books, we have them in book form and ebook form. I read them in ebook form because it's really nice to be able to, it's basically one big story that she just kind of cut apart into three different books. So it's nice to be able to go right from one to the other. So did I read the titles yet?
Oh, please read the titles. They're amazing.
I know. They do kind of make you shudder. But the first one is called In Bed with the Highlander. Then it's Seduction of a Highland Lass. And then the last one is Never Love a Highlander. Which the last one wasn't my favorite, but I did enjoy the first two quite a bit. And the last one was good to finish the story. So that was the McCabe Trilogy by Maya Banks.
I have considered doing a book display of just like kilt romance.
There's a ton.
But like, they're all checked out.
They are, yeah. Like, that's why ebook is nice, because you can just go in.
I can't get enough covers, right? Yeah. I mean, to do it, so.
Please feel free to wear your plaid while you read. Okay, Bill.
What Scottish actor has Scotland Forever tattooed on his arm? And when this Scottish actor had his photograph taken for a Reed poster, which displays in public libraries, he proudly held a book about Scotland, and he's the true 007. Yes, it's Connery, Sean Connery. Sorry about that bad impression. I'm going to recommend this movie one more time, and I'm going to recommend a couple more movies, but I'm going to recommend this movie one more time. As a matter of fact, I showed it for the Movies of Maine earlier this year. It's a favorite of mine, and I'm going to make sure everybody sees it. It's called The Anderson Tapes. It's one of my favorite Connery movies. In brief, it's about a heist of a New York apartment building over a Labor Day weekend. And this movie moves like a bullet train. It's much more than a heist movie. It also deals with electronic surveillance, government agencies, Big Brother watching. The movie was made in 1971. Sidney Lumet, the director of the film, said the theme of the movie is that the machines were winning. And with every passing year, this movie tends to prove him right. Of course, having Sean Connery in the center stage helps your movie a lot. We also have another favorite Connery movie of mine. It also stars Michael Caine. It's called The Man Who Would Be King, directed by John Huston, based upon a novella or a story by Rudyard Kipling. John Huston wanted to make this movie back in the 50s with Clark Gable and Humphrey Bogart. But I guess Bogart passed away, and later he said he got Caine and Connery, and he's glad he waited because they were absolutely perfect. And when you see this movie, you'll see why. It's just great, rousing adventure. It's got a great story to it. And Connery and Michael Caine are just perfectly cast. The final Connery movie I want to talk about is A Fine Madness. This one's directed by Irving Kirshner. This was made in the mid-60s. He plays a Irish poet in this, and he's trying to come up with the perfect poem. And it's just, he's a womanizer and a drunk, but I just highly recommend it. It's an offbeat comedy, and it's in our collection. So all these three movies, fine films, are in our collection from a proud Scottish actor.
He was in Zardoz, too, right?
I've been wanting to mention Zardoz for the past, like, 2 minutes.
We don't have Zardoz, sadly.
Oh, no,
Zardoz. We did. We don't have
Zardoz.
Wasn't he the original Highlander?
I was going to talk about Highlander, yeah, but I thought it'd be too obvious with the
Maybe Maya theme. Banks had him in mind when she started writing her Highlander romances.
Yeah, the movie where he played a 5,000-year-old Egyptian that had a thick Scottish accent.
Well, The Hunt for Red October, where he plays a Russian, but I just think he has such a stature, you get over it.
Yeah, you get over it pretty quickly. It's one of those things where you think of later, it's like, oh, that's funny, but you don't notice.
Wait, he was Scottish.
Oh, yeah.
We sail into history. It's a great scene, but yeah, he's Scottish.
Yeah, please no shooting at the nuclear missiles or something.
Can you do a cold open?
Tickling my fancy this week is the official trailer for Horns, starring Daniel Radcliffe and Juno Temple. It's based on one of our favorite writers, Joe Hill's book of the same name.
I'm going to love you for the rest of my life.
Just love me for the rest of mine.
Please, you have to believe me. I loved her.
What does it feel like to get away with murder?
Let Amazon to save their soul.
I should ask the devil to punish whoever killed her.
You know, you don't have to convince me. I believe you.
Why are you protecting me? Because if I did anything to her, then I'm a monster.
How do I look? Did you notice anything unusual?
Alien hearts?
What are they?
You know how I think we should proceed? I should grind me up some OxyContin and have a little snort.
Everyone in this town is going crazy. I think it's because of me and these horns.
You killed that innocent girl, now the devil has claimed you.
He didn't kill her father, and now people are telling me all these things I don't want to hear.
I'm so bad, I'm bad. I'm pretty enough to be on TV, right?
I've got to figure out who really killed Marin and get him to confess.
Ig, I would never hurt her.
Tell me everything that happened.
Admit you killed her. It'd be such a huge scoop for me.
I got an idea. How about you guys beat the heck out of each other, and the winner gets an exclusive interview with me.
What's that snake doing around your neck?
I made a new friend.
Are those horns?
Damn right, they're horns.
Not a Scotsman, but a Frenchman directed it, Alexander Aja. You may have seen his film High Tension, or perhaps The Hills Have Eyes. Anyway, I'm super excited. And you should be, too. You've got time to read the book now before you see the movie. It comes out in October. All right, Bill, what's tickling your fancy?
Tickling my fancy is a book or book on CD I listened to called The Sons of Wichita, How the Koch Brothers Became America's Most Powerful and Private Dynasty by Daniel Shulman. Probably wouldn't have listened to this book in the first place, but the guy was on Jon Stewart, and the book just happened to come in, didn't have a hold on it, so I thought, hey, what the heck? Well, anyway, the Koch brothers, let's talk about dysfunctional families with billions. There's Frederick Koch, the collector, Charles Koch, chairman of the board and chief executive of Koch Industries, Daniel H. Koch, executive vice president of Koch Industry, and William Koch, businessman, sailor, and collector. I listened to the book, and it takes a little time to get into. It gets in, discusses the senior and his involvement in the John Birch Society. But when it gets to the son, it's quite fascinating. There's this trial between two of the brothers. The book details their generous philanthropic nature. However, cheapskates when it comes to safety use in their oil pipes and other industries. To put it bluntly, it's like Dallas, but in Wichita. So one more time, I'm recommending Sons of Wichita, How the Koch Brothers Became America's Most Powerful Dynasty by Daniel Shulman. Amanda, what's tickling your fancy?
Is there a pool fight scene? That's why I like Dallas. So.
That's Dynasty.
That's Dynasty. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Dynasty. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Dallas is JR. Who shot him? The Koch brothers.
It's coming full circle.
Yeah, probably.
They're coming after Bill. Right?
It'll all be a dream sequence.
They're coming after the dream.
That's funny. They'll cut the funding because PBS, they were big funders of PBS, and they ran a derogatory like on Frontline, and they cut the funding what they gave to PBS. They're very vindictive. They have very thin skin.
Nice. I want to talk about a new book that just came out called Doll Baby by Laura Lane McNeil. Yeah, which I don't usually like dolls, but this was a good book. It's set in New Orleans in the 1960s, so there's all that racial tension. Our main character, Liberty, called Ibby, goes to live with her grandmother, Fanny, after her dad dies unexpectedly. And we also have Fanny's maid, Queenie, and her daughter, Doll Baby, set in the story, and so it's kind of the interaction of this family. It is a combination of, for those of you that read The Help, it's like The Help. It's not quite as funny. It's a little more serious, with a little bit of To Kill a Mockingbird, and then just a touch of The 12 Tribes of Hattie, if you read that one when Oprah recommended it. It touches on a lot of issues, like the racial tension and the living in the South in the 60s. It doesn't really hit it quite as hard as The Help did, and it's just kind of a good story. But it had a surprise ending that I didn't see coming. I'm not going to say more because I don't want to wreck it for you. So if you're curious about Doll Baby, I definitely recommend that, especially for you, Mike.
I love dolls. I love babies.
See, you're in.
You know, if there's like a gunfight or philosophy discussion, I'll be totally in it.
No gunfight.
So I was going to recommend a restaurant. Basically, like, you know, recently it was my birthday, and so I thought as a birthday present to myself, I would go to a expensive restaurant downtown called the Rodizio Grill. It serves Brazilian food.
Ooh, do tell.
Well, see, you know, everybody who knows me knows that I love two things: delicious, tasty, spicy meat, and I'm extremely lazy. So this is like the greatest in, you know, basically these waiters will come by your table. You have this little wooden hourglass that's like red on one side and green on the other. You flip it to green and waiters come by with like meat on like a this long like
sword,
like a sword or a skewer or something, and be like, hello, sir, would you like this long Brazilian name? It's got, you know, it's cinder cut meat, or and I always say yes. And they put some on my dish, and I enjoy it. Then another guy goes by, hello, sir, would you like, you know, my favorite was a chicken that was marinated in wine.
Ooh.
It was delish. It's like, hey, I'll take three of those. Of course, sir. You know, and, you know, they're like, and there's a salad bar over there. And I'm like, that's a trick. No way. I'm going to stick with the loads and loads of meat that you keep bringing me. There's about 8 or 9 cuts for lunch. I went for lunch. They've got a salad bar and like a dessert bar. I skipped those. And I also like that the very first thing the hostess told me is the bathrooms are over there down the hall. And I'm like, wow, this is like a Roman vomitorium deal. Like, how much am I going to eat? And then, you know, she's like, you know, and then she told me something about the effect of, you know, be, you know, take your time, sir. This isn't like a marathon. Eat as much as you think you can. I'm like, this is amazing. You know, and then, you know, she gave me like this cheesy bread, which was good, and fried bananas, and which was good. And then, like, you know, I ate it in about 30 seconds. It's like, okay, make it with the meat. And I would not recommend the Brunswick stew because it just tastes like Brunswick stew. I was sad. But the white marinated chicken, which I don't remember what it's called because it's a long Brazilian name, quite tasty. Yeah, I've written down here, they serve an assortment of meats, other things, and more meat.
Vegetarians do not apply then.
Well, they have a salad bar.
And again, you don't know what it looks like.
I have no idea what's on it. I mean, they bring it to my table. I don't have to. I don't even have to say anything to them.
So just draw it.
Red and green.
Yeah, sale? Yeah. You flip it to green when you're ready. You flip it to red when you're not. So you get, you know, if you need some time to digest, or use the bathroom or whatever. You know, you flip it to red and, you know, be cool. And then I did that once, and then they walked by with some sort of Brazilian assortment of pork that I missed out on. It's like, no. I had to wait for the cycle to start anew because it's like a cycle. They'll be like, you know, it's the same meat from like 20 minutes ago. And I'm like, sure. More, sir. You know, more, please. You know, oh, yeah, you get these little tongs. They'll like cut it and then you grab it with the little tongs. It's an experience. I'd highly recommend the Rodizio Grill. So what's your downer one, Brian?
Oh, the downer one. It's the 100th anniversary of the outbreak of World War I, which was supposed to be the war to end all wars, and it was not. I love history as much as any nerdy librarian, but the only part of history or period in history that I really truly geek out about is World War I history, and I could never figure out why. And then I remembered that my great-grandfather's World War I regiment was actually like on the wall in my brother and I's bedroom, like amidst all his like heavy metal posters. And I realized it did some like weird like imprinting, right? So just one book that I would recommend about World War I is To Conquer Hell, The Moose Argonne, 1918 by Edward G. Lengel. So you might know America actually came in really late to World War I. Some might even say that the things that mattered in the war were over by the time that we were there. This did not stop our generals from doing exactly the same thing that the European generals did at the beginning of the war, which is throw thousands of men at barbed wire and machine guns and mustard gas. And so the Moose Argonne was the one big offensive that the United States participated in. It's called To Conquer Hell because it was terrible and wretched and really nasty. And if you want to read about it, it's in there. It's also, you know, it's also just a general history of the American big guys and also the foot soldier experience during World War I. There's a lot of pages dedicated to Alvin York, who you may or may not know is the huge bronze statue on the Capitol grounds next to the one building sort of on the southeast corner of the Capitol grounds. There's the huge 20-foot statue of one soldier. It's Alvin York. I don't want to give too much away. There have been movies and books and things about Alvin York, but if you want a really good historical account of who he was and what he did and why there are statues of him on our state capitol, you could check out To Conquer Hell by Edward G. Lengel. Bum, bum, bum. Corrections. I said that Jason Weissman was the creator and big IP boss for the Shadowrun franchise. I was incorrect. It was Jordan Weissman. I will pass that off to mental flatulence. Now,
happens
sometimes. I also said that the Shadowrun Returns bonus materials were the NES and Sega Genesis soundtracks. It is not. It's the soundtrack to the new game, Shadowrun Returns. But some of the music was composed by Marshall Parker and Sam Powell, who had done some work for the NES and Genesis games back in the day. And I'm going to chalk that up to just improvisation, because I'd asked, do you want me to talk about music or video games?
I made you do both.
You threw down the gauntlet. And you were like, video game music.
Bring it.
So I was winging it a little bit. And Mike, are you going to talk about Snowpiercer today? Or are we done with Snowpiercer? Boom. Okay, exactly. I was going to say the Snowpiercer DVD is on order. and the original French graphic novels, but written, I think, in English. I know they're in English. I'm just kidding. Are on order from the library. And I knew that last week, but I was sinister and didn't mention that because we were trying to get people to go see it in the theater. I believe it was held over at the Belcourt. Will be held over for yet another week. Who knows?
But there's also on demand, if you're so inclined.
You can get it on demand.
Is it free on demand?
No, it's like $8.
Were there other corrections?
No, we're perfect all the time.
Those were all my mistakes. For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music was composed by
Adam Dean.
Performed by
Adam Dean.
Recorded by
Dean Stockwell.
Yes.
I don't want to have to do a correction next week on that. I guess it'd be easier just to do it how we were doing it. Our theme music was by Adam Dean. Thank you, Adam, for the theme music.
Woohoo!
You know, it's good because, you know, Greg's not here today, but, you know, in between segments, Greg's been singing it. He's like, Pop Matic.
It's awesome. You have to hear this.
You may have noticed, too, that I've been putting it in there. I've been spliced it in there.
It's a catchy ditty.
Exactly. It is. So it's working.
Pop Matic. Thanks, Adam.